Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. With me today, we have a food blogger, Jeannie Jones. And just quick background about Jeannie. She began working in the restaurant industry when she was 15 to help pay bills. Since then, she's had so many roles over the years, server, chef, in management, catering. Now she's retired from the food industry, but remains active, like I said, in her food blog, A Jeannie in the Kitchen. Absolutely love the name. Her blog mission is to help people have fun in the kitchen, enjoy both in and out of the kitchen, and encourage readers to make the most out of life. So welcome, Jeannie. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
So let's dig right into the food blog. We'll get into the background, but I want to talk about the food blog because I had a lot of questions originally when we started talking, and I wanted to save them for this. And really, you know, what was the genesis of the food blog and kind of why? And I want to talk about the evolution of that because you have a pretty decent following. And in today's world of video, how blogging is still plays a relevant role. So if you want to start with kind of the genesis and we'll go from there.
It happened like so many things. It happened accidentally. My friend and I were cooking and she was going to throw something away. I'm like, no, don't throw that away. You can reuse this for such and such. I don't even remember what it was because I've been blogging now for about 7.5 years. And it was actually her idea and her creation, kind of her inspiration, we'll put it that way. And I toyed with a whole bunch of things. And originally she wanted me to come up with some kind of way, or her idea was for me to come up with some kind of way of how to reuse leftovers, because that was kind of my...
Okay.
That was kind of the impetus of it. And then it's like, well, in order for me to prepare leftovers, I have to create firstovers. So we'll go from there. And that's how it kind of all sprang up. It was very organic and a lot of fun. And originally, because I was going to focus on how to reuse leftovers and how to recook those, I was going to call it a second plate. But then, like I said, I had to create the firstovers before I could do the leftovers. And it became A Jeannie in the Kitchen.
Well, so. I love it. I love the title because it's almost, you know, back in the day. And I am old enough to know, remember, you know, I Dream of Jeannie and some of the older shows. So it all kind of made sense of what you're doing. Now with the blog, is it just, I mean, I've kind of read through it. Is it recipes? Is it a mix of life and recipes? Like, what are you showing when you're writing these blogs?
It's a mixture of life and recipes. It's a whole bunch of different things. My husband and I travel all the time. Like I said, we're about ready to embark on another vacation coming up this weekend. We travel all over the world. I'm an avid scuba diver. I love life. And like Wolfgang Puck said, and he said it best, live, love, eat, and or something to that effect. And that's kind of my motto. You know, food is life. Life is fun. Life is to be enjoyed. And I do my best to do so. It's a combination of recipes, primarily my recipes that I cook. My background is restaurant and catering management and a chef, and I've been in the food industry, like you said, forever. I love to cook. I love to experiment. I love to do all kinds of different things. I love all kinds of good food. It doesn't matter what kind of food. Before I got, I live in Colorado now. I've been here for 25 years. Before I got transferred out to Colorado, I was working in California doing a lot of corporate catering and corporate restaurants. And I worked in one of the many Chevron accounts that my company had that I was working with the think tank. I had all the geologists, the researchers, the biologists, and all it had people from all over the world. So we kind of did a lot of catering for different ethnic catering and ethnic foods and celebrations starting from that. And I love doing those are the fun things. Catering is, I like catering much more than I like restaurants per se, although I love restaurants as well. But catering every day is different. Every menu is different. Every day is different.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's its own chaos. I'm in the camp of, I liked the creative part of catering because you're always trying to figure out what the client wants, what's new. But at the same time, when things are nailed down and, you know, there's going to be some sort of base, usually it's that repetition of over and over and over again that just, it drove me nuts doing a catering event. And I'm like, I can't plate this thing anymore. I'm tired of chopping the same thing to make it fit for a plate. Whereas the restaurant, again, you're cooking the same dishes, but it always brings something different with the night. Let's take a step further back, even then from the catering days. You know, you started in the kitchen when you were 15. So maybe let's tell the genesis of how you fell into food.
By accident. You know, my parents were both, they were hardworking blue collar people, and I needed to have to work to help pay the bills and their bills and my bills. And it kind of started from there, and it worked around my school schedule. And I always kept coming back to the restaurants. Initially I wanted to go to college and get a quote unquote real job, so I would be out of the kitchen and out of the restaurants, but I kept coming back. And finally it just kind of happened. And one day my mom was reading a magazine and she saw an article for culinary school. And she didn't think I was listening, but I did. And a couple months later, I came back and said, "You remember when you brought that article up about going to culinary school? I'm interested." "Oh, I didn't know you were listening." "Okay." And so that was when I really decided this is what I want to do as a career.
And what did when you went to school, did you do 2-year or 4-year?
I did a 2-year, but it was kind of a different circumstance. So I started off at one school that was run by Chef Raymond Hoffmeister. I don't know if you know who he is. And it was Los Angeles Culinary Institute. It's been a while. I had to think about that. Los Angeles Culinary Institute. And after a while, a lot of the chef instructors decided to branch off and go off onto their own school and create a new school. And I went, half the students went with the new school, half the students went with the old school. I went with the new school. And that was the Southern Cal, at the time, it was the Southern California School of Culinary Arts. I think they've since changed the name. But I actually got a really good education, more so than everyone else, because I didn't have the money to pay for culinary school. Culinary school is expensive. And because I got in right at the ground level, I was actually part of the crew and helped them open up the school. I was working in the office. I was working with the chefs to actually get the kitchens up to spec and ordering all the product and ordering what they needed and as far as pots and pans and cooking utensils. And so I got a great education as far as that goes, more so than most other people did. And so we worked out a deal that if I worked for free, they would cover my education.
Very nice. There's so many ways around the cost of education, especially when it comes to culinary. There's so many internships or things you can do. I just think you got to be willing to put in that work and the effort, and it'll present itself. And like your point, you know, I put myself through culinary school and I did the same thing. I was working in a kitchen to gain the experience at the same time that I would of the some more of the technical skills that I was learning in school, you know. Working in a kitchen taught me a lot of this is what happens in the real life, you know,
exactly.
This is actually what goes on, more so than just the school piece of it. So, you know, if you're watching, listening, I always recommend get some sort of job in a kitchen, try different things, especially if you get into it younger. I got in a little bit late in the game, but you have that flexibility. You have time on your side. So try different things. What works? Cause again, what some people love and enjoy in the catering, others love in the restaurant sectors, and which others love in contract management. There's so many branches of the tree, right?
Exactly. And you bring up an excellent, excellent point. I mean, I think we've all probably worked with many people who quote unquote call themselves chefs that can't cook. And well, I went to culinary school, so I can do this, and I'm going to come out and I'm going to get $100,000 and I'm going to be a chef. And then they can't cook. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't think so. I had one chef years ago, back right before I got transferred out to Colorado, we found out later he lied on his resume and everything. And he claimed he was an executive chef and he had worked on all these cruise lines and he had done this. He didn't know what a basic stroganoff was. And he kept insisting that it was more like a goulash as a tomato base. And I'm like, yeah, no. And I pulled out like 10 or 15 different cookbooks. I'm like, find it in there for me, because every stroganoff recipe that I've ever cooked and made and seen is usually kind of like a sour cream base or a yogurt base, one of the two. So find it in there for me because you're wrong. And then he would burn stuff. And I had to talk to my boss and I said, I can't put the stuff out that he's cooking. It's unacceptable. I can't do it. So there's a lot of people that think that they know how to cook and they think that they know what they're doing. And exactly like what you said, they get to a kitchen and it's nothing like what they learned in culinary school.
Yeah, there's a lot of improvisation. And with today's technology, I know I'm a broken record when I've said it before, is that I tell people I'm not some fine dining super executive chef that has like this crazy knowledge in all these restaurants. I was in contract management for most of my career, but what I did have was a good foundation. So, right, the proper searing, braising, the proper terminology and the proper techniques to execute on a dish. So as long as I had some sort of a recipe, and again, a recipe is just, right, it's a guideline.
It's a guideline, exactly. Yeah.
It's not, you have to follow this to a T, but here's the basics of the ingredients. You look at the ratios, you work that out. And now with technology and AI, there's a lot of things that people say, can you make this? I can plug it in, get an assimilation, and kind of look at it from a basic knowledge of what I have to know that will work. Or no, we need to tweak this because those ratios just aren't going to be proportionate to what we're making.
Exactly. And I do I have literally hundreds and hundreds of cookbooks. You name it, I probably have it. I have all different kinds and ethnic foods and everything. I can't follow a recipe to save my life. I'll look at it and exactly like what you say, like this, don't like this, more of this, less of this, tweak that. And so no matter what, every recipe that I make, I create, it's my own. That's just kind of what I do. So, and exactly like you say, they're not set in stone.
Yeah. What cookbook would you recommend to people if they just had to pick one up and kind of thumb through it, pick something out of it? What would you recommend?
You know, I happen to have one right here. Give me just one second. I love all kinds of food and I love all kinds of ethnic foods and everything. Can you see this? It's for Mediterranean. This is one of my favorite books for Mediterranean foods. And it covers everything from like Italy, Greece, Middle Eastern foods, Armenian foods, all kinds of things, that whole Mediterranean region. And it goes way more in depth than so many other cookbooks that I have. And I love all kinds. And years ago, I was working in a public relations firm outside of San Francisco or in San Francisco. And we had our own test kitchen. Most of our clients were food clients. And the kitchen manager said something that has stuck with me ever since, and I'm trying my best to reach up to that. She had well over 3,000 cookbooks, and she said, you never have your last cookbook. And that's kind of where I'm at. I don't have 3,000, but I do have a lot. I have over 700 cookbooks.
And for those that are listening, what was the name of that book, just in case they're not physically watching?
It's called Mediterranean, the Ultimate Cookbook.
Okay. Awesome. So we'll link that in the show notes. So that way, if anyone wants to look at that, we'll link that as well. So, you know, throughout your career, you know, I got to ask which role you've done a lot of things. Which role do you think kind of shaped you the most and why?
That's a tough question. All the roles shaped me in different ways, in various ways, and they all kind of prepared me. I would say probably catering and being a catering manager. My boss, he was the owner of the catering company, and he was the executive chef, and I was his sous chef. And after about 6 months, he let me just kind of go on my own because he trusted me, and he knew I knew what I was doing, and we went from there. So I'd say the catering, but then also when I was working with Guggenheimer, that was the company that I did all the corporate stuff for. When I first got started there, my boss had told me that we were a subsidized account and we would always be in the red. We would never be in the black. That was just to be expected. And within my first quarter that I was there, I took us into the black, and part of the reason why I did that was one of the clients that said, I know we have to use you exclusively for catering, but I'm really bored with the menu that we have. can you do something else? And I literally took the menu and I threw it away and I said, what do you want? I can do anything you want. What do you want? And from there, it took off. So I think I just was allowed to be myself and to create and to play. I think that was probably the most defining thing that I could do.
Do you think that a lot of that's being stripped away today with the way food costs are, labor costs are, that things are so corporatized that they just, they don't have enough flexibility and freedom to actually execute and given a chance to put things right with an account? You said subsidized accounts. I've been in that scenario.
Sadly, I think yes. Food costs are so expensive. Labor costs are so expensive. You have to have, we did everything from scratch and I kind of had those constraints as well. And so I put in many, many long hours, as anybody in the restaurant industry will tell you that that's what they do. That's part of it. And if you're not willing to put in the time and the effort, don't do it. This isn't the industry for you. There were plenty of times we'd have catering events going on and we'd make everything from scratch. And I could only do so much overtime with my staff and I'd have to send them all home. And if I wasn't done, whatever needed to be done, I stayed until it was done, making sure that it was all taken care of and all done. So there'd be plenty of times I'd get in it because we started early in the morning being a corporate thing. And then we usually ended fairly reasonably early until I had these events. And sometimes my day would start at 4:30 in the morning and I'd get home at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And I'd start all over again at 4:30 in the morning the next day. So that's kind of the industry. And if you're not ready to put in those hours, don't do it.
Yeah, those are the couple things. You're going to work long hours. And I think we're trying to change some of that. And I think there are ways with technologies and different kitchen gadgets to help that. But I think to actually make it to the next level, you have to put in the time for the craft. Not so much just not just man hours of, okay, I've cut onions for 10,000 hours, but really the craft as a whole, right?
Yeah.
Looking at.
I agree. Yeah. You have to put in the time and the effort. You do. It's funny you bring up the onions. One time when I was in culinary school, I pissed off one of my chef instructors. I don't know exactly what I did or what I said, but I have a knack for that. And my punishment was he wanted me to cut a 10-pound bag of onions. After about two onions, I was crying so hard and my eyes were stinging so much. I think he felt sorry for me. Not so much that his punishment was cruel and inhumane. I think he was afraid I was going to cut off a finger and sue him because I couldn't see. It was terrible. I was burning and crying. It was terrible.
Yeah, I think we've all had those days where we rip open the big old bags of onions and have to just slice, dice, whatever it is. And then, yeah. I mean, eventually you just kind of get immune to it after a while, but it's definitely no
fun. I disagree. I still cry at cutting onions. I disagree. I still like tea. And one of my kitchen staff, we somehow had a pair of swim goggles in our kitchen. How they were there, I don't know. I inherited them somehow. And I'm a swimmer, but I didn't put them in there. He put the goggles on and he was chopping onions and he had like the straps that were flapping every time he turned his head. And it was just hilarious to watch him do that. But no, I've tried every trick. I still cry with onions. So,
yeah. When was the moment, you know, through your career that you knew it was kind of time to step away from the industry? And then how long of a gap was that before you started the food blog?
I think when I got married late in life. And I think when I got married, that was kind of the kicker because before I could spend as much time as I needed to, there was nobody that I had to answer to, no constraints. If I needed to be there from 4:30 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, then I could. But once I got married, I couldn't do that anymore. And I think that was kind of the turning point. But it wasn't, I mean, I was never been out of the restaurant industry for very long until I actually retired. I'd say the longest gap that I had in the restaurant industry was maybe 5 years before I finally said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And then the blog, I started it about 7 years ago. I've tried everything. I've done all kinds of things, but I always kept coming back to the food and the kitchen and the world of culinary arts.
Yeah. What do you decide in your blog? What becomes a blog post? What's the thought process? Because when it comes to writing, I'm terrible at writing. Absolutely terrible at writing. I've never been, and maybe that's the wrong way to think of it. I should be thinking positively. Like, I can write better. It's just not a strength of mine. So where do you find your inspiration and then say, I want to turn that into a blog post?
My inspiration comes from all over the place. Sometimes reading books, sometimes reading magazines, thumbing through cookbooks, an article that I come across on something else. One of my followers had written something about bananas, but it was real. This was just recently, like within a few days ago. It was just a real short blurb on bananas. And then it made me go and research all about bananas. And so I did a blog, I think I called it Peel the Banana. And I went into the history of bananas and the, you know, what you can use them for and all the different variations and how good they are for you. My inspiration comes from all different kinds of things. As far as the writing part, my main degree, I guess you would say, is a BA in English literature. Bachelor of Arts, in English literature. And then I worked in a public relations firm. I love to write. And I worked in a public relations firm where most of our clients were food clients. And so a lot of it came from that. We had clients, we had Ghirardelli Chocolate, we had Rice-A-Roni, which they're actually the same company. We had the California Raisin Board. So if you remember I Dream of Jeannie, do you remember the commercials, the claymations, like the first claymation with It Through the Grapevine?
The
team that I worked on, we created that.
Super cool.
It was really cool.
Are the good days. Those are the good days. Gumby. Yeah, I remember those commercials very, very vividly, very distinctly. I was young, but I definitely remember because I grew up in a household where we had like the three channels and that was it. So whatever was on mainstream, that's what we had.
That's what you watched. Yeah. Well, I didn't create it, but the team that I worked with, we created it. So I've always had a love for writing. And I think the blog kind of just, again, happened organically with my love of food combined with my love for writing. And it just kind of came together that way.
So you've also dabbled in some video. You know, I dug into the YouTube channel, but that was back in like 2020 and it kind of stopped. Was it not maybe as enjoyable? Was it that writing was really where you shined or you wanted to be? You know, why you started some video and then why did it kind of stop?
I see you hit the nail on the head right there. I like being behind the scenes way more than I like being in front of the scenes, in the front. I like to sit back and just kind of, I did that. You know, I like that better than being, and it just didn't work out because I'm not technologically savvy. Unfortunately, I'm still old school. I needed somebody else to be there, and usually that would be my husband. And so I had to work around his schedule and it just wasn't something that I was really interested in. If something came up and inspired me, I would do that. But my heart is more in the writing and the creativity part of it than actually the video presentations of it. I mean, great for people who can do it, but it's not my thing.
You know, it'd be fun if we could figure out, I just thought of it now, is if there was a way to turn like a blog, and I know the word vlog, but turn that blog and keep it somehow original and whole, but make it into a video. I don't know how that would work, but that would be something kind of cool that I don't think it's out there.
I'm willing to try it. So I'm open to just about anything.
I just think with the way video is taking over society, that it would be kind of a cool new thing. And again, I don't know how you'd blend it all together to keep the originality of it. Cause there is something with writing when you read a really good book that has complexity to it. You know, I can definitely appreciate that in all things, fiction, nonfiction. I don't think it has to be just, you know, for fictional writers, but the way that they compose words, sentences, even though I don't truly like understand all of it, you can tell the level of complexity that somebody put into that writing.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it kind of becomes your baby. You know, you started from the beginning, from the inception, and then you watch it grow and you see where it goes from there. And it's kind of like you're a parent of sorts when you're writing something, I think. But then I think with any artist or anybody who's creative, if you're an artist and you're painting a picture, I think it's the same thing, you know, and you're look at what I did, look at what I created. And I think it's kind of the same thing. I think anybody that's creative, we like to build things and we like to get it just right and just so. And that's somebody who builds or does stuff with their hands or carpenters or in, you build a business. It's kind of the same concept, I think. So you just kind of like to start it and watch it grow and see where it goes and what it evolves into and then let it kind of takes on a personality and a life of its own.
But I think there's also something to be said about consistency. You've been doing it for
Definitely, definitely.
7.5 years. It can be very intimidating to start something and not have a lot of traction. A couple people read it, few people read it, 10 people read it or watch it, whether it's written or video. It can be very discouraging to be like, why am I still doing this? But to your point, if it's a passion and you love it enough, if you keep the consistency up, usually the compound effect will happen and readers, followers, whatever it is you're trying to achieve out of it will usually come.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly about the consistency. I just want to add that I think it's also you have to be sincere and you have to be real. Because if you are insincere about something, if you don't really know what you're talking about, your followers, whether they be readers or viewers, they're going to pick up on that. So, you know, if you, I talk about my mistakes as much as I talk about anything else. Hey, I made a mistake on this. Don't do this. That didn't work. Be real. People can see that. They can sense that. And if you're not real, and if you don't really know what you're talking about, if you don't really have a command of what it is that you're presenting, people will pick up on that and they'll leave you. But if you're honest with them and if you're open with them, showing your good, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Hey, this didn't work. Don't do that again. They're gonna re It makes you more human. It makes you one of them, and they pick up on that, and that, so that promotes the loyalty that they have, and I think that that's with anybody. I mean, think of your favorite singer or musical group or performer. You like them because of their consistency. You like them because of the command of what they're doing, of their artistry. And it's kind of the same thing, I think.
Yeah, no, you definitely hit it with a world of such fakeness, right? There's so many AI generated this and fake that, and anyone tries to be something, people can still sniff out the bullshit.
Oh yeah,
And
totally.
to your point,
Totally.
they leave. And I would rather have a smaller audience of people who understand, they get it, they like what's being put out versus just a bunch of fake numbers to say, oh, look at how many people are looking, watching, listening. It's a smaller core group. And yeah, being real and showing those flaws. I just put out a video on LinkedIn, I think it was last week. It was a little blooper reel. I couldn't get
And
this
those are
intro.
fun. We love those.
I couldn't get the intro down. And I was like, you know what? People don't get to see this side of it because we usually, you know, obviously get the takes and get it kind of polished up for the clientele and what we're trying to make out of it. But it was like, yeah, this is what it really goes into behind the scenes. And the amount of feedback that I received from that of like, man, thank you for publishing and showing that this shit is hard, that people
Yeah.
aren't perfect, and what goes out, you know, takes a lot of time, effort, and practice. It just built a lot more credibility. And so I've been thinking about that more as I dig into more video, that rather than, you know, trying to nail down the perfect intro, unless it's just completely botched or you say something you can't say, just roll with it. And
Yep.
honestly, the video and stuff I've read, people just, they glance over it. You make it the biggest deal to yourself.
Yeah.
But in reality, people glance at it was a 1 second thing. They think about it literally for a second, and then they're continuing to focus on whatever it is. They're continuing to watch, or they've clicked off, and they're not gonna think about it again and be like, "Oh my gosh, he said the word and
Yeah.
I can't watch that anymore because he
I
said the
can't
word
watch that.
um."
Yeah. Well, I think you're absolutely right. It makes us human, and we are our own worst critics all the time for everything. Oh my gosh, I did this, I did that, blah blah blah. If they only knew. And you know, like I was telling you before, and I won't say it here, I'll be nice. But in the restaurant industry, particularly in the back of the house, we all have a favorite word. that we don't really like to say outside of that world, but we say it a lot in the back of the kitchen, the back of the house. So it happens. You know, and I think you also have to, and you probably know this as well, you have to be able to think on the fly. I mean, you can't have something set in stone and then just really blow a gasket if it doesn't work out properly. In our industry, things change in the blink of an eye. I've been in silk dresses doing dishes because my dishwasher broke or my dishwasher left. I've been in dresses and spilled grease all over me, and you had to serve the food out. You had to expedite it. So, I mean, things happen. I ran out of this. What do I do? I don't have time to go to the store or to get something else. All kinds of things happen, and you just have to roll with the punches. It's not anything that's set in stone. You have to be flexible. You have to be, and you have to, okay, well, that didn't work. What's plan B? Let's come up with a plan B, like now. A plan C. Okay. We'll work on that. We'll change it. And unfortunately, so many people in so many different areas, they're so rigid. It's like, you can't be, you can't, you just have to roll with it and let it go and let it roll off your back. So
yeah, very black and white, where there needs to be a little bit of gray sometimes. And
exactly, a gray and various shades of colors and all kinds of things. And
yeah,
so I mean, 100%. I was making a cake the other day, and I, like I said, I don't normally follow recipes to the T, but this time I was really trying. I do so more so when I'm baking than when I'm just cooking. Cooking, you can ad lib it as whatever you want. But I was making, and I was making a lemon almond cake. Well, I ran out of lemon zest. So I was like, okay, well, I have orange zest. So I put in orange zest, and anything that required lemon, I put in orange juice, orange extract. Came out fine. It came out great. So you just kind of roll with it. And that's my favorite way of cooking, actually, is what do I have? What can I use? This will go with this. This is a good substitute for that. You just have to roll with it.
Yeah. If I open your fridge right now, what would that tell me about who you are?
We eat everything. There's nothing that we don't eat. Because we're going on vacation on Saturday, we're just kind of going through whatever we have and throwing things together. Tonight's dinner, I'm creating my own recipe. We'll see how it comes out. It's based on a recipe, but I'm going to call it a Greek casserole. And it's going to be basically a potatoes with steak and a yogurt base of spinach, tomatoes, garlic, onions. We'll see how it turns out. So mainly because I want to get rid of all this stuff, because that's what's in my refrigerator and I want to get rid of it before we leave.
Sometimes those are the best recipes, when you look around and see what you have and then throw it all together, and your hopes are usually not super high, but
yeah,
I'd rather
pleasantly surprised.
Exactly. That's where I was going.
But the hard part with that is when people, oh my gosh, this is really good. What did I put in there? How did I do that? You got to remember what you put in there. It's like, okay. Yeah. I'll try to recreate that. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So when you do you take any inspiration, even when you do things like leftovers with the blog, are you putting any of those recipes into the blog? You're like, you know what? That actually worked.
Absolutely.
This would actually make a really good blog post.
Absolutely. I do. So, I don't have my blog up right now, but, I'll make whatever it is I'm making first. And then if I have a lot, it's just my husband and I, we don't have kids. So we have a lot of leftovers, and I call them firstovers and leftovers. And I always recreate something completely different from the leftovers. I'm trying to think of something that I had offhand that I did recently, but I'm always recreating, if I can, to make it a completely different dish using my leftovers. Like if I have leftover shrimp or something, maybe I'll turn it into a ceviche. If I have a lot of vegetables that I want to get rid of, and I'll turn it into a ceviche, or I'll turn it into a pasta, or all kinds of things. So, like I said, originally I wanted to call the blog A Second Plate, but that didn't work because I needed to create the first overs first. So, but now, I'm constantly recreating.
On the blog post, it looks like it's a running blog post. It doesn't mm-hmm. like it's not segmented. Have you ever thought about potentially like taking, like you said, there's the first dish and then the leftovers, almost not desegmenting it, but like subsidizing where it's easy to find, like someone could like click into that and be like, oh, that's the recipe. And then if they want to see a leftover based off something, be able to click on that and then be able to find that leftover. Kind of so that it's a little bit easier, right? Someone who says, well, what do I do with my leftovers? They can kind of read about that. And then, oh, if I just want to create something from scratch, here's that dish. You ever thought about potentially splitting that?
Yeah. I got lots of ideas. I just haven't figured out how to implement them all the time. When I do that, though, I will always make a reference link to the original. Here's what I made originally. Here's what I'm doing with the leftovers. The idea has been in my head for quite some time, and I don't know quite how to figure it out. I'm starting to think about it, but I don't really know how to do it. I'd like to write a cookbook, that's exactly that. Here's what I made at first, and here's what I did afterwards. But it hasn't come to that yet. So
yeah, that's where actually I was going was, what do you want a genie in the kitchen to go next? You said a cookbook, more video, maybe something totally different, or is it just a labor of love that no matter what, you're just going to put what's on your mind, your heart, your mouth, and put it on on paper?
It's pretty much a labor of love at this point, and I do love it, and I find it very therapeutic. I like to write, I like to be with people, and some of the obviously, I don't know all of my followers and vice versa, but there's some that I have actually met and become good friends with, quite a few of them. And some we've never met, but we're still good friends via the internet. And we know each other pretty well. And we'd like to meet at some point eventually, but we haven't. It's just ever evolving. I really don't know what the future has in store because it's just always evolving. And I kind of roll, like I do in a kitchen, I kind of roll with the punches, and wherever it leads me, that's where I go. Awesome. So, but I would like to do a cookbook. I've thought about doing all kinds of other things. I just, in all honesty, I don't know how to market myself. That's mm-hmm. the big thing right there. I don't know how to market myself. So
well, from my research, what I would say is just start, right? When it comes to marketing yourself is stay being you, because that's what people obviously are attracted to with the blog post. You got a decent following and people want to read and hear what you have to say. Otherwise they wouldn't, right? Otherwise you'd have two people, you know, subscribing and reading, and it's just be you. And I think today, you know, the tech stuff, you know, we could chat on after camera. We can help. There's a lot of ways that's very easy, and being very authentic to who you are, it makes it very relatable. And I don't think there has to be a lot of gimmicks and high techy stuff to make it
good. Cause that's not me
to make it work. And I think that's, but a lot of people would relate to that they're afraid to do something, start something, and they're doing something and they don't even know how to get themselves out there. And I think there's a lot of ways to do it that don't require all the tech that, you know, a lot of people.
Well, that's actually
use.
how I started my blog. I had never read a blog before. I didn't really know what a blog was. And my friend was like, oh, you need to do this. And it's like, well, I don't know how to do this. And so I did some research, and then that's kind of how it evolved. And one thing led to another. And here I am. Here I am with you today.
Yes. All right. One final question. If you could cook a meal for anyone, living or gone, who would it be and what would you make?
Probably my daddy. My dad and I were very close, and two peas in a pod, and he passed away 18 years ago, and he was originally from Australia, and so he loved his custards. And Jeannie dear, would you make me some custard? So I think I would make my dad some custard and something, a true authentic Australian dish, and do that and have my daddy with me. Because he was, will you make me some custard? So every time he'd come out and visit, I'd have a big pot of custard ready for him. So
I I couldn't ask for a better ending to a segment about bringing family into, because food, right? That's what connects people as a whole.
Oh, heck,
and families.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do people go if they want to learn, if they want to read the blog, if they want to just connect with you in general, where do they go to do so?
So my blog is called Jeannie in the Kitchen, and I'm Jeannie. And it's just real easy, one word, all lowercase, ajeannieinthekitchen.com. And you should be able to, that should take you right to the website and my blog site. And it's, like I said, all one word, AJEANNE, that's how I spell my name, inthekitchen.com. So, and people are always like, is it Jean? People never know how to pronounce my name, but it's legally technically Jean, but my middle name is Elizabeth, so it's always Jeannie. So I've always gone by Jeannie. And so it just, a Jeannie in the Kitchen.
I love it. I love it. Is there anything we missed? Anything you want to get out to the audience before we wrap this up?
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for the opportunity. Every day is a new day. Every day is a new adventure, and live life. That's what it's all about. Make it fun, make it great, and make the best out of every opportunity. If you get a bag full of lemons or onions, turn it into something good. Make lemonade, make caramelized onions. I mean, everything can be turned into a positive opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. And if you couldn't tell by the conversation today, Jeannie is a joy to speak with. She
You
have a vibrance of knowledge of being in the kitchen, but then at the same time having a perspective of there's so much more to life. Live it, enjoy it to its fullest extent. It just radiates off of speaking to you. So I just gotta say
thank you very much.
Thanks for taking the time to be with me. And I will link all the cookbook, the website, how to reach Jeannie, all in the show notes. So if you want to read and learn more about what she does, that's where it will live. So until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.